All right, so picture this. You're a fisherman, right? Your livelihood depends on the health of the local bay, you know, the fish, crabs, all that. Then some company comes along, makes a mistake, and suddenly the bay is polluted and you can't fish anymore.
Exactly. That's the kind of scenario at the heart of this case, curd versus Mosaic fertilizer.
We're going to deep dive into it today and figure out how the law handles situations like this.
Yeah, it really brings up the question of who has rights when it comes to environmental damage. You know, what happens when someone's livelihood is harmed, but they don't technically own the thing that was damaged?
Right. So to break it down, we've got some podcast guidance that lays out the basic arguments, a perplexity analysis that digs into the complexities of the case, a standard legal brief, and the actual case brief from Curd v. Mosaic itself.
They should give us a pretty comprehensive view.
So let's get into it. This whole thing started after Hurricane Frances back in 2004.
Right.
Now, the hurricane itself wasn't the problem. It was what happened afterwards at Mosaic Fertilizer's facility. They had this big phosphogypsum storage pond, you know, a byproduct of fertilizer production.
Right. And apparently there were warnings about the stability of the dikes holding back all that wastewater.
But those dikes failed and tons of polluted water spilled into Tampa Bay.
And that's when the trouble really started for the local fishermen.
I mean, can you imagine you depend on the bay for your income and suddenly it's contaminated with who knows what?
It was a huge blow to the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Fish populations plant, even the crabs took a hit.
So the fishermen sued Mosaic for their economic losses, you know, lost income and all that.
Makes sense.
Right.
But here's where things get interesting, legally speaking.
Yeah, because they didn't own the fish or the bay itself.
Right. So the question was, how can they claim they were harmed when they didn't technically own the damaged property?
That's what we're going to explore.
It all boils down to this thing called the economic loss rule. Basically, yeah. It often prevents you from suing for purely financial losses unless your own property was damaged.
So what happened in the lower courts?
Well, the trial court dismissed the fishermen's claims.
Really?
Yep. They said because they didn't own the fish, they couldn't recover anything under the economic loss rule.
Oof, that must have been rough.
It was. The fishermen appealed, but the Second District Court of Appeal actually upheld the dismissal.
Double whammy.
Yeah, things weren't looking good. But then the Florida Supreme Court stepped in and said, hold on. We need to clarify this.
Why did they decide to take the case?
They recognized that this wasn't just about a few fishermen. It had broader implications for environmental law in Florida.
Right. So the stage was set for a big legal battle?
Absolutely. They certified the question of whether Florida's pollution statute allows for recovery of economic losses even without traditional property damage.
It sounds like a pretty significant legal question.
It was. There were two main issues at play. First, how to interpret this specific section of Florida law, Florida statute, section 376.3133. It talks about any person being able to recover all damages from pollution. So the question was, does any person include someone who didn't own the polluted property but still suffered economically?
Mm-hmm. I see.
And the second big issue was the economic loss rule itself. Does it apply in this kind of situation?
Right. So they had the pollution statute argument and then just a general negligence claim against Mosaic.
Exactly.
So let's start with that statute. What did the Florida Supreme Court have to say about the any person language?
They went with a really broad interpretation. They said when lawmakers use a language like any person and all damages, they mean it.
So they weren't limiting it to property owners.
No way. They emphasized that the law doesn't require the person who was harmed to actually own the polluted property.
So the fishermen were in the clear on that point.
Yep. The court said their claim under the statute could move forward.
Okay, so round one to the fishermen.
You got it.
Now, what about that economic loss rule? It seemed like a pretty big obstacle.
It did. But the court addressed it head on. They acknowledged that the rule exists and is important, but they said it's not a blanket rule. It has limits.
So in what situations doesn't it apply?
Well, mainly when there's the contract involved or we're talking about defective products.
And neither of those were the case here?
Nope. No contract between the fishermen and Mosaic.
That's fine.
And we're not talking about a faulty product.
So the economic loss rule was out.
Out the window. The court basically said that applying it to this kind of environmental case would be a bad idea.
Because it would go against the whole purpose of environmental protection laws.
Right. And it would leave people like the fishermen with no recourse.
I see. So what about the fisherman's straight up negligence claim against Mosaic?
Yep.
You know, saying Mosaic was careless and that caused them harm.
The court used the standard 4-part test for negligence, duty breach, causation, and damages.
Right.
And they found that Mosaic did owe a duty of care to the fishermen. The fishermen's livelihood depended on Tampa Bay, so it was foreseeable that polluting it would harm them.
Okay, so Mosaic had a duty to be careful, and then they messed up and breached that duty.
Exactly.
And the pollution directly caused the decline in marine life, which hurt the fishermen's income.
Bingo, all four elements of negligence.
So it sounds like the fishermen had a pretty strong case all around.
They did. And the court was clear that the economic loss rule didn't block this negligence claim either. For the same reasons, it didn't block the claim under the statute.
Makes sense, but it wasn't a unanimous decision, right? There was a dissenting opinion.
Yeah, Justice Poulston agreed that the fisherman could sue under the statute, but he had a problem with applying negligence in this case.
What was his concern?
He was worried about what he called limitless liability.
Meaning?
Well, if the fishermen can sue, what about restaurants that buy their seafood or tourists who don't want to visit a polluted bay?
So he was drawing a line saying the fishermen are directly affected, but where do you stop?
Right. He thought it could get out of hand.
That's a fair point.
Right.
So how did the majority address this?
They really stressed the special circumstances of the fishermen. They said the fishermen have this special interest in the marine life because their livelihoods depend on it.
So it wasn't just anyone who was vaguely inconvenienced by the pollution?
No. They were directly and specifically harmed, and they had the fishing licenses to prove it.
Interesting. So big picture, what are the takeaways from all this?
Well, first, Florida statute section 376.3133 is really broad. It protects anyone harmed by pollution, not just property owners.
Right. And the economic loss rule isn't a catch-all. It doesn't automatically apply in environmental cases like this.
Especially when there's no contract and no defective product involved.
And maybe most importantly, the court recognized a duty of care between polluters and people like these fishermen whose income depends on the environment.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, it's huge.
So this case could have big ripple effects.
Definitely. It could empower more people to sue polluters, even if they don't own the thing that was damaged.
It shows that economic harm from pollution can be a legitimate basis for a lawsuit.
Yep, even without direct property damage. So as we wrap up, here's something to ponder. Given this special interest idea, who else might have a similar claim? What about ecotourism operators or businesses that rely on a clean environment for their image?
It really makes you think about who has a stake in protecting the environment and how the law can help them do that.
It definitely blurs the lines and opens up some interesting legal avenues.
For sure, this case could have a lasting impact on environmental law.
And that's a wrap on this deep dive into Curd v. Mosaic.
Thanks for listening.
Catch you next time.